Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The power of personal photography is undeniable, especially today with tools like Facebook, Instagram, and Flickr. As much as those sites are about sharing pictures among friends, there's also an appeal to those who have no relationship to the photographers and the subjects. My guests today have created an exhibit based on found photography, some going back 80 to 90 years. Rabbi Mark Fitzerman has been a collector of what he calls vernacular photography for many years. Scenes of family dinners and occasions, trips and vacations, a documenting of a life that's captured his attention. While simply snapshots, many of these photos unintentionally display deeper and larger truths. But are they art? Well, that's the question addressed by Fitzerman and Rand Sulfok, executive director of Philbrook Museum, in their exhibit Unexpected, Vernacular Images from the Collection of Mark Boone Fitzerman, which is on display at Philbrook downtown. Rand Sulfok, the executive director and curator for the exhibit, joins us along with Rabbi Mark Fitzerman from B'nai Emunah Synagogue. They're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Rand and Rabbi Mark, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Always great to be here.
This is a very interesting project on a number of levels, but first I want to start with the photographs themselves. They come from your collection, Rabbi. How did you begin collecting these found photographs?
Part of this project is autobiographical. I'm the designated family photographer, and it means that I've got the full record of life in our family, not only my photographs, but the photographs of my parents and grandparents and my wife's family also. So at this point, I'm sitting on a huge hoard of vernacular photographs, but those are the ones that belong to me. I started collecting other people's photographs about a dozen years ago. I had seen an exhibit in New York City, and I was on my way to Dallas and stopped in Atoka, and there was a little antique shop right at Roadside, and I asked to see all their photographs. And what came out of the bin was this astonishing image of a 30-year-old man with a perfectly volumetric head. It looked more like an egg or a sphere or something in between than anything I'd seen in a human being. And I started collecting on the spot.
Mm. And since then, I guess the collection has grown, and there seems to be a couple of themes that guide the things you try to find. What are some of those themes?
Well, I think I'm always looking for images that are arresting in some way. They sort themselves into maybe obvious categories. There are pictures of women, pictures of children, but there are also many pictures of snarling dogs. It turns out that vernacular photographers prize images of people who have just been fishing and who have enormous strings of fish, trophy images, really, of the hunt or a fishing expedition.
Or of family gatherings. That's another one. And there's some really, I'm sure they weren't intentionally, but they're pretty funny images of family gatherings. One that struck my mind was a dinner from probably the 1940s, and it's a very formal portrait, but the participants in the dinner look like they would rather be anywhere else than taking that photograph. Mm-hmm. And you could just hear the muttered asides, "Would you please take the photograph already?" And it's just this wonderful leap of imagination you can take from that photograph. And I think that's probably one of the beauties of found photography.
Mm-hmm. It's a very beautiful image. And Rand displayed it opposite a similar image with a very different feel. But you can hear the photographer in the picture itself saying, "Please sit very still. I've got a slow shutter. And if I'm going to make this picture work, you guys have to sit almost paralyzed." And that's how they look in the picture.
Yeah. Now, Rand, how did you come into this project? How did you discover that the rabbi had this wonderful trove of found photographs?
Well, I have a colleague that I work with at the museum who happens to be a friend of Mark's, Jeff Martin. And he was looking at some photographs, and I don't want to say too much, but I think one aspiration is that eventually rabbi's work will end up in a book of some kind. And he said, "You might think this is interesting stuff." And working in the museum, I love looking at new work. You know, I get the blessing of being a committed generalist, so I'm open to looking at anything. And I started looking at these photographs, and I thought they were pretty fascinating. And I think the thing that really fascinated me about them is the fact that we talk often about these things. You just mentioned it. They're found photographs. But I have come to think of them more as being kept photographs in some way. You know, how is it? And that's what fascinated me about these things is why was this one image kept? You know, what was so, you know, you find these things that might have been that one perfect shot or that one eloquent glimpse at something. And for some reason, everything kind of came together. And that's why it was kept. That's why it's lasted for 70, 80, 100 years. I mean, and ended up in this exhibition. That, to me, was fascinating, especially in a day and age when we're sort of, we just, there's more imagery being made and taken and we're swimming in it. How has the filter of history actually allowed these photographs to continue to have a life of their own? And what can we learn from it or appreciate or laugh about?
Well, in a day with Tumblr, you know, I mean, this is something else. This was something that was kept. But eventually, the whole thing I think is interesting to me is that eventually it was discarded. It didn't make the cut at some point because, you know, maybe the treasured family photos passed from generation to generation or maybe just, you know, everything was discarded, but eventually they end up in a secondhand store and they have some appeal to a person who says...
Or a flea market or an auction.
Yeah, right. Can you talk about what you're looking for when you collect a particular image? Because there's a wide range. I mean, there's these formal family gatherings. There's some where it's obviously documenting a trip of some sort. There's others of, oh, that car just flipped over on its side. I think I'll take a picture. Or other times it's just this sort of innocuous view that has its own beauty and its innocuousness, I think. There's one of a river that's just, you know, it's...
Which looks like the idea of a river more than an actual river.
Yeah.
Some platonic ideal of water flowing between two banks. And I'd agree with Rand that some of these are astonishingly beautiful and some are odd and haunted and deeply disturbing. There's a picture of a woman with her back against a tree, also in front of flowing water, and it looks as if she's about to scream. And you have to wonder how an image like that made the cut. Somebody preserved it. Somebody may have found it disturbing but impossible to throw away because it captured some truth about danger and hostility and chaos in the world and felt that it represented some deeper idea of how the world itself is built.
You know, I think that disturbing element is also a big part of this. Although the photos on their face are innocuous enough, there are some images that are just, you know, one is, you know, you can see Americans' fascination with guns. I whether it's actually holding a gun or a toy gun in the case of kids, or just, you know, pointing the finger and the thumb towards somebody. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other image that looks like the person has put a rope around their neck and they're standing on the ground and it looks like they're hanging themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as a collector, you have to say, what was this all about?
I think that violence goes very deep in vernacular photography, and it may have something to do with the nature of photography itself. We're snap shooters. There's something that we're taking from a scene and frequently without the permission of the people pictured in a photograph. There are people who say that photography is inherently violent, but some of the images in the exhibit are overtly violent and very disturbing for that reason.
Can you talk about that one image where I think it's a guy is like, mm-hmm. he's like got a rope over a tree. He's basically got the rope around his neck, and he's sort of laying limp of some sort. What was your reaction when you saw that?
I was disturbed, but you look closely, and I credit Rand with helping me see aspects of these images that were maybe less disturbing than I first thought. So,
I mean, it looks like he's having a goof. Yeah,
that's the thing, isn't it, though? I mean, that's part of it, too, is what happens when you're in front of the camera. What do people do when they're in front of the camera?
You mug. You make a face.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that some of them actually are disturbing. I think more of them tend to be a little bit more bizarre, and if you're talking about that vein of it. But I think it's because people get in front of that camera and they perform in some way. Or that would be – and it gives them a space within which to do that that they may not find in the other realms of their life.
Yeah. My guests today are Rand Suffolk, Executive Director of Philbrook Museum of Art, and also the curator for The photographs of Rabbi Mark Fitzerman are my other guests. Unexpected vernacular images from the collection of Mark Boone Fitzerman is on a display at Philbrook downtown, and they're our guest on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the interesting things about these shots are there's a couple that really caught my eye was there's two pictures. They're almost like they're publicity photos of a Sears store, and I don't know where. But one is this utterly deserted scene of the front of the store. And then the next image next to it is like a mob scene, everybody trying to get in the door. Tell us a little bit about those photographs and why they were special to you.
Well, I think it's a favorite for both of us. And it's part of a group of images that are almost movies in miniature, before and after images, sequences. They almost seem as if they're at the beginning of movie making itself. There's another picture in the collection. I think Rand was drawn to this at the very beginning. A man standing in front of a cactus, and then suddenly he disappears. So it's very close to the Sears photographs in spirit, here and gone, present, absent, and I think both those sets of pictures were at the top of Rand's list.
And what appealed to you about those, Rand?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, the Sears pieces, I mean, I love the, like you said, that great contrast between dead silence and then overwhelming, you know, desire to get into that.
You know, I mean, the imagination sort of runs wild with it. Yeah. It was like, did they have a new product or is there, you know, a new invention? And
going out of business, everything's, you know, 80% off. What is it that kind of drove people there? But the process of actually selecting these things was as rewarding, I think, for me personally as actually seeing the final product, because we went through a few hundred of these images to kind of get down to these 40 or so that we have on display. And it, you know, it's kind of remarkable to, you know, you'd see the decision-making that we went through. You know, you were talking about earlier there was one image that we, of a young boy, completely blurry, but you could just tell that it was pure happiness on his face. And you just knew some parent could not bring themselves to throw that away. Because even though it was a horrible photograph, this was still, you know, absolute purity in terms of just joy on this kid's face. Now, that didn't make it into the show, but those kinds of happy accidents, I think, are a significant component of this kind of material. I'm thinking right now of an American painter named Charles Hawthorne who talked about watercolors are a happy accident, you know. And so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that these could have been the one great image that someone happened to take. Somehow that gave it a level of transcendence that's allowed it to have this ongoing life.
Yeah. Now, how did the two of you connect as far as determining what was going to be in the show? Was it a matter of just opening your collection to Rand to look over, or did you have discussions? What exactly?
I tried to audition images that I thought would work in this exhibit, but ultimately the decisions were Rand's, and I'm grateful because I think that there's a good balance in this exhibit between warm, affectionate images, images that invite people in, and that other set of images that are haunted and disturbing.
I think Rabbi is very generous. I joke a little bit about him being a very good intern through the course of this project, but the truth is this was a very collaborative process. He gave me an initial group of a few hundred images. I spent some time with them, went through them. And I said, okay, you know, here's my top 125. Well, we got to get this down to 40. Let's start talking about these together. And we would spend a couple hours at a time kind of just looking at them and making substitutions. And he would say, well, if you like this one, what about this one? He would go back to the big pile and bring that out again. And he would convince me, or I would say, no, I'm committed to this one. You know, we would go back and forth. And I think that conversation allowed us to edit this to a really, I think, wonderful grouping of works, but it also, I think, the process was really exciting for me because it really encouraged me, you know, even though I'm in the museum all the time, given the nature of my role there, I'm not afforded the privilege or the absolute responsibility of spending a lot of time looking at things, not nearly as much as I'd like to, or I hope our visitors do. And this process was really rewarding for me because it gave me that chance to kind of spend that quality time looking at these images, learning from them and drawing from them.
That was one question I was going to ask. You know, you've graduated from curatorialship, I guess, if you will, to being the director. I guess this was a fun time to actually sort of go back to what probably got you interested in art in the first place, you know, the curatorial aspect of a museum.
Absolutely. I mean, I try and do install a show every couple few years just to kind of stay interesting. But this was a, you know, this just hit a chord with me. And after I started spending some initial time with it, I thought, you know, this is a project that I want to do. And Rabbi Fisherman was so patient in terms of dealing with my schedule and when we were going to be able to do it and that sort of thing. And I just really enjoyed it.
Now, Rabbi, let me ask you about the collection as a whole. Is there an artistic aesthetic that drives it, or is it more a hobby that sort of ran amok, or what exactly in your collecting these found photographs?
Well, I'm not a curator, and I'm not a scholar. I'm just an interested and, I hope, close observer of this material. So I would say in any group of a couple of hundred images, there's one worth looking at over and over again. And that was the satisfaction of this process for me, looking again at things that I had seen before, placing them in a larger context, trying to decide what I really felt about these images, what they made me think of. This field is actually very new. The first lectures on vernacular photography as a form of serious interest took place in the 70s, first real exhibits in the late 80s and 90s. So this is a field that's just now taking shape, and I've learned as much as I could, but sitting with these images was the real satisfaction.
You know, as I was looking through the photographs, I was trying to understand, other than just they're interesting photographs in and of themselves, but why you would take time to purchase these in a secondhand store or wherever. And I was thinking, well, I could see this one. This might make an illustration. Were there any sort of, I guess, functional elements of collecting these photographs? You know, I could see they could make great illustrations to a sermon of some sort, or something like that, or a teaching.
I felt that the best of these images are self-justifying, in the sense that they hold a space in my imagination, at least, and I believe that they would be interesting to anyone who saw them. They don't play a functional role in my life as much as they offer the same pleasure as high art photography or anything that you'd see in a museum.
One of the interesting things is there's some that would almost qualify as high art, although I'm sure they were accidental in nature. And I'm thinking of this overexposed graduation picture, which it just made me think so many thoughts. It's basically a headshot of somebody in their cap and gown, but it's horribly overexposed, so everything is almost white. And, you know, the face is washed out, the cap and gown is washed out, and yet I could see this in a Chelsea gallery.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. It's just like it's an effect. It's something that people are trying to look at objects, that, and especially everyday objects or an everyday portrait, in a brand new way, which is sort of what we're doing in art, what people are doing in art.
It's interesting that you brought that up, because one of the Mark has actually, I think, spoken very eloquently about one reading of that work, and it not necessarily being as much about the compositional effects as sort of an analogy for where this woman has come in her life and what that means. And do you want to talk about that?
Please,
I mean, it's really beautiful.
Please do.
Well, she seems to me someone who's at a kind of pinnacle moment. It's either high school graduation or college graduation, but it's the middle of the 20th century, and her prospects are likely very much limited by time and place. So what I tried to say about that image, what it made me feel, was that it was a woman. There's a kind of pathos in that image, because she's at a high point in her life, but already her prospects are being bled away by circumstance. She probably won't be professional in the way she won't be allowed to enter the profession. She may not be permitted to enter college. And I thought that the fact that she seems to be disappearing on the page was the most meaningful element.
Very strong social message. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's why I think – I'll just say that's why I don't think it's appropriate or even necessary to kind of quickly jump to a conclusion that these things are high art or low art or somewhere in between. I mean, the fact that they have the ability to encourage people to think, to provide a narrative. I mean, that's really what – one of the defining, I think, elements of this work is that there was some narrative there. Whether it was overt or it asked the viewer to provide one, it sort of instigated a reading of it. That was sort of the threshold for me in terms of what made it into the show. And that's what all good art does, is it makes you think. It asks you to ponder something perhaps larger than yourself or to go more deeply within yourself. And I think that's what these works do ultimately.
There was another image that really caught my eye. It's either a double exposure or it's a glass reflection of someone looking at a gentleman in a car. He's got his arm hanging out the window, and in this reflection or double exposure, I'm not sure which it is, there is a parade going by, the American flag, marching feet walking through there, and I thought that was a really cool image as well.
It's a kind of a melancholic image. You see a parade in the street and you expect to be gladdened by the experience and maybe thrilled by the sound of the band, and no one in that picture seems to be reacting positively to either being in the parade or witnessing it. I thought that it had an overcast quality, and it undermined my sense of what to expect in a picture of a parade. That's what many of those images do. There's another picture of two children on a porch, and you expect that two little toddlers will be very portrait of innocence, except one of these kids is looking pretty malevolently at the other. And I thought there was something arresting about that photograph too. A window opened on another aspect or another experience of childhood.
There was another image that caught my eye, and I'm not sure, you know, in the 20s and 30s or 40s, you look at photography, like pose photography, people didn't smile naturally. It was kind of like, this is serious, we're taking a picture here. And you have this troop of what looked to be Boy Scouts, although the way they're dressed, they almost look like Civil War reenactors. And there's not a smile one. I mean, this is serious business. We're in formation, and it was amusing in its own way, because here you have these kids, you feel like they're in this activity for a good time, and it's deadly serious.
Kind of an undertone of Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
Abandoned children who are trying to make their way through a very chaotic experience.
Yeah. The name of the exhibit is Unexpected Vernacular Images from the Collection of Mark Boone Fitzerman. It's on display at Philbrook Downtown. My guests are Rabbi Mark Fitzerman from B'nai Amunah and Rand Sulfok, the Executive Director of Philbrook Museum of Art, who served as curator for this exhibit. I want to ask you, Rand, is this something we're going to see more in the future now that we have Philbrook Downtown, more exhibition space where you're utilizing either collections from the local community or art from the local community? Is this sort of an ongoing dialogue that you're going to do within Tulsa itself?
I don't know. Yeah. When we developed the program for the downtown space, we wanted to have those two smaller galleries that would give us the flexibility as well as opportunity to do changing or special exhibitions. And this was certainly one of those opportunities where we decided just to capture it and to go ahead and put it on display. I mean, we're open to anything, and that's what this space gives us an opportunity to do. But I don't think we went into it saying, okay, this is local collections are going to be an important component of what we're doing. That's not really what we set out to do. But if there are collections of quality that make sense from an educational standpoint and an aesthetic standpoint, then we'd certainly love to talk to people about that.
One of the interesting things about this exhibit is the way you've set it up. You have magnifying glasses, because some of these images are very small. You remember photographs didn't become really big until the last 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, really a snapshot was exactly that, a very small photographic image. So there are magnifying glasses, and it seems like the whole point of this exhibit is to really look in and really get close to these images. And, you know, because you have to, because of their size in a certain aspect, but it's almost like it's, you know, usually a lot of time artwork, it's like keep your distance, stay away. And this is actually inviting you to come as close as you can.
I think that these photographs, this show really does a lot to invite a certain kind of intimacy. And it's not just because of the scale of the works. But we also put those magnifying glasses out there, too, because these photographs have a lot to offer. The more time you spend actually looking at them, the more things you see. That was one of the things that with both made our process of selecting which works, which images actually went in, both fascinating and very difficult. Because you'd start looking, the more you would look at something, the more you would see. And we would find ourselves sort of, did you know that was there? What the heck is going on back there? That's really interesting. And so we really encourage people to look about three or four times at these works because that you will find something new the more you look at it. In fact, I'm sorry, but I was just at an event a while back, and Mark was talking about the collection. And he had one of these little photographs, but it was blown up big on a screen. And he was talking about it, and I had no idea that the first sixth of the image was actually an adult's leg from their waist down, just kind of framing it. I'd never paid attention to that before. It was actually in that work you were just mm-hmm. talking about, the two little children kind of sitting and looking at each other. So the more you look at these things, the more you're going to see.
Yeah. I was very concerned that people wouldn't spend the time, and very gratified that people spend lots of time in the gallery. And it's holding a magnifying glass in hand and really investing themselves in this experience.
What do you hope to do with the collection at some point? Would you like to have it put out a book? Because, you know, vernacular photography mm-hmm. is becoming increasingly mm-hmm. popular.
I'd love to see that happen. I'd love to see this exhibit tour. It's a chance to, having the collection is a chance to write about things that I really love. I've started a blog called unexpectedbeauty.net related to this exhibit, where I take photographs that aren't in the exhibit and try to talk them through and register my own feelings about them, a little bit like this conversation.
Yeah, well, it's a great exhibit at Philbrook Downtown, Unexpected. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Rabbi Mark Boone Fitzerman of B'nai Amunah Synagogue and Rand Suffolk, the executive director of Philbrook Museum of Art, discussing their collaboration on the exhibit Unexpected Vernacular Images from the collection of Mark Boone Fitzerman, which is on display at Philbrook Downtown through May 11th. You can learn more about the exhibit at philbrook.org or unexpectedbeauty.net. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs or would like to hear another program back on demand, you can anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just search through our archives and you can listen on demand on the website. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.